Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear. Vanity Fair.
So, Alexa, the ratings for the women's college basketball final were off the charts. 19 million viewers, at least, watching on television. What does that number represent for the future of women's basketball?
It means that women's basketball is undeniable. It's here. It's something that you can't ignore, especially when you compare those ratings to other sports. I mean, we're talking about that game being the most watched basketball game, pro or college, over the last 5 years, the second most watched non-Olympic women's sports event on record, in and out through the men's final. So if anyone, you as a fan or companies or media organizations, were putting women's basketball off to the side previously, you can't ignore it now.
That is Alexa Philippou, who covers women's basketball for ESPN. And I'm Brian Stelter. Let me welcome you to Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. We're also joined today by Tom Clute, a contributing editor for Vanity Fair who covers sports, media, and politics. Because today, we're going inside women's basketball and women's sports more broadly. Right now, women's basketball is at an inflection point as interest in the game is surging at both the college and the pro level. Alexa, you've been in this. You've been covering this sport for years. What was so different? What felt so different about this March Madness season?
It felt like everyone was watching the tournament. It felt like it was the biggest story in all of sports for the last month. And when I was in that building in Cleveland, you could feel the energy with history about to be made, whether or not it was South Carolina winning it all or Iowa getting the job done. And then everyone in the background, which is they just knew that those ratings were going to be magnificent. We saw record-breaking game after game after game, even before we got to the national championship game. So when we were in the arena on Sunday, everyone was kind of just like, is it going to be 20 million? Like, what are the ratings going to be? What, you know, how big is it going to be? And it definitely kind of met those expectations and beyond.
Yeah, the official, you know, per minute number is 18.9 million. But as a TV ratings junkie, you know, that's just the beginning. You know, the cumulative rating, the number of viewers who tuned in during this game, who were watching on so many different platforms, it's just phenomenal. And you mentioned Caitlin Clark. Tom, can you give us, for people who maybe have pretended to know what's going on but don't really know what's going on, who are late to this story, give us the short version of the Caitlin Clark story.
I mean, I think Caitlin Clark is just a truly singular talent. I mean, I will say, and this is probably a sign of me getting older, I'm very sympathetic to any cries of recency bias. It kind of drives me crazy when fans are so quick to anoint the latest star player to come around. But I do think in the case of Caitlin Clark, it's clear pretty much immediately when you watch her that she's just a different breed. You know, her shot making, the ability to connect from distance like Steph Curry, that just is not something we've really seen before in the women's game. Not to say that there haven't been tons of great players, there have been great shooters in the women's game. I mean, Sabrina Ionescu, we just saw her at NBA All-Star Weekend going toe-to-toe with Steph Curry. But I think Caitlin, she's different. She is one of one. And I think that what she's doing is unique. And I think that's reflected in these enormous television ratings. People haven't seen this before and they're responding accordingly.
And as we're talking so much about the Caitlin Clark phenomenon, let's hear from her in her own words. Here's what she said about what this season has been like for her.
When I think about women's basketball going forward, you know, obviously it's just going to continue to grow, whether it's at the WNBA level, whether it's at the college level, like everybody sees it, everybody knows, everybody sees the viewership numbers. When you're given an opportunity, women's sports just kind of thrives. And I think that's been the coolest part for me on this journey is just, you know, we start our season playing in front of 55,000 people in Kinnick Stadium. And now we're ending it probably playing in front of 15 million people or more on TV.
Is this what always drives college sports and pro sports, Alexa? Some, you know, groundbreaking, you know, record shattering player who then drives interest of the sport? Is that how it always works?
I think so. I mean, we heard even just being at the tournament, people were comparing what we're seeing now in women's basketball to, you know, Bird and Magic in the NBA and how that helped drive interest in the league. And it feels like that even now. I mean, I was at the Final Four covering Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark going head to head in that national semifinal. But then before that, when I was in Portland, it was about Juju Watkins facing Paige Beckers. And what's so exciting about the women's game now, and this is something you've heard people say pretty consistently throughout the season, is that the women's game has these stars, these household names that seem to be lacking more so on the men's side. And a huge part of that is name, image, and likeness becoming something that these stars can take advantage of. They're building their profiles. They're able to make money. And it's really made it so that you could be talking with a casual sports fan or maybe someone that's not fully into sports, but knows who some of these players are. And people, like we were just talking about, definitely know who Caitlin Clark is because of how she's transcended all of that. But if women's basketball is going to keep going this direction, that means that she'll only be just the start of this.
Give us a little bit more detail about that name, image, and likeness change. This happened, what, about 3 years ago now, and it's really changed college sports. But for people who aren't tuned in the way you are every day, what's it mean? What has it meant?
Previously, college athletes weren't able to capitalize or profit or make money off of their name, image, and likeness. And so when the NCAA allowed this 3 years ago, it really changed the landscape of college sports as we know it. It's meant that college athletes can make deals with brands. I mean, when we talk about Caitlin Clark, she has deals with Nike and Gatorade and State Farm. She's in State Farm commercials. That was actually another thing we noticed during this tournament. It felt like women's college stars everywhere on TV, not just in games, but in ads. Juju Watkins had a great one with Joel Embiid too. And that's really allowed these players to boost their profiles. And it's going to help them, I believe, when they are going into the pros, because they've already been able to build who they are as a star off the court. And when they get to the WNBA, when they get to the pros, they're going to have that baseline. They're going to be able to already even have some of those endorsement deals that they're able to carry moving forward.
I want to ask more about the tournament and your experience covering it, but let's talk a little bit about what's to come, what's coming up next. You don't really get a break because the WNBA draft is on Monday, right, Alexa?
The WNBA draft is Monday. And of course, with Caitlin Clark expected to go number one overall to the Indiana Fever, I think everyone, I mean, yes, it's, there's no real anticipation in terms of where she's going to go or who the Fever would take, but to be able to see that moment actually happen for her, I think everyone will be tuning in. Last year's draft had really great ratings. It was the second most watched draft, I believe, and most watched draft since 2004. So I believe this one will even, you know, surpass that pretty comfortably.
Hmm. Tom, are you planning to be there?
Yes, that's the plan here in Brooklyn. And I just to piggyback on a point that Alexa made earlier, I really do think that this does feel akin to the NBA in 1979 when Magic Johnson and Larry Bird entered the league. I think what a lot of people forget is that the NBA was really floundering at that time. There's actually a terrific old Sports Illustrated article from that same year, 1979. I think the headline is, there's an ill wind blowing through the NBA. You know, TV ratings and attendance were both plummeting. The public was tuning it out. And men's college basketball was by far a bigger deal. And within that world, you know, no one was bigger than Bird Magic.
Perhaps we've never seen a final game with two greater individual players than Larry Bird, the player of the year from Indiana State, and the Magic Man from East Lansing, Urban Johnson.
So they played each other in the 1979 championship game. That drew a record audience. And then, of course, they entered the NBA, Magic to the Lakers, Bird to the Celtics. And that really is regarded as a watershed moment in the history of the NBA. They resuscitated this league that, you know, seemed to be just going to hell in a handbasket. And so I think there's at least a chance, there's certainly a hope that Caitlin Clark's arrival is going to be similarly transformative for the WNBA. The league already has a lot of momentum. Last year's finals between Las Vegas and New York drew a record TV audience. So I think that with Clark and the influx of these other talented players, there's reason to feel bullish about it. And, you know, you heard the WNBA commissioner just the other day, Kathy Engelbert, saying that, you know, she's hoping that to double their next media rights deal. So clearly they feel like the wind is at their back. And I don't think there's any question that Caitlin Clark is the accelerant there.
So the draft is on Monday. There's lots more to cover. Quick break here on the podcast. We're back with Tom and Alexa in a minute.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
And we're back on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Today, we're going inside the business of women's basketball. I'm joined by Tom Clute of Vanity Fair and Alexa Philippou of ESPN. Alexa, you've been covering women's basketball in some capacity for, what, 5, 6 years? How would you describe the trajectory of the business in those years? I know, you know, this tournament this spring has been, you know, mind-blowing. It's now at another level. But what's it been like for 5 or 6 years?
I think you could tell that the momentum was going in the right direction. It felt maybe more steady or gradual before this recent explosion, especially when we talk about the college side. But there definitely were signs that it was on that upward trajectory, both in terms of ratings, in terms of attendance, in terms of merchandise sales, in terms of all those indicators that we look at that signify growth. And also the way that other companies, other brands, other businesses want to get involved in the WNBA, or if it's, you know, corporate sponsorships getting involved in the NCAA, kind of all those metrics, it was all kind of going in the right direction. But there's been, I mean, when I think back to the Final Four last year in Dallas, like that really felt like the, you know, someone hit like a button that was like, you know, exponential growth. And it's really seemed to be noticeably different since then. I think even just anecdotally, I had people texting me or messaging me who never really talked to me about women's basketball before that are in on the action, that know the household names, that want to, you know, get my thoughts on who's going to win it all, or, you know, how much I think they're going to win by and whatnot. And we had those discussions. So between just like the actual metrics, between the business side of things that we've seen, and between also just like the more fan experience, I think it's something that everyone's getting more in on, even more over the last 6 years, but especially over this last year or so.
Yeah. With all the talk about Caitlin Clark, who was playing for Iowa, I neglected to point out that South Carolina did beat Iowa in the final. So let's talk about South Carolina. Tom, you profiled Dawn Staley, the coach of the Gamecocks, back in, I think it was last November. So you were onto this. You were calling this a breakthrough year for women's basketball and describing Coach Staley being at the forefront. Why did you decide to profile her during that season opener? Tell me about what you learned from her.
Well, I caught her, you know, at a really auspicious time for the sport. The WNBA finals, I think, had just transpired a month before. Like I said earlier, that netted a record television audience. There was still a lot of momentum from the previous NCAA tournament. And her team was actually tipping off. Their season opener was over in Paris, which itself was a big deal. It was broadcast on ESPN. And so that just sort of signified this surge in fanfare surrounding the game. I'll tell you one thing that Coach Staley talked about with me that I was struck by, and I've been thinking about in these last few days, you know, in the wake of these monster ratings from the women's Final Four. You know, in January, the NCAA and ESPN agreed to a new broadcasting deal for the rights to about 40 collegiate championships. And that package includes women's basketball. College football, men's college basketball, they're each sold in standalone deals. And women's college basketball coaches like Dawn Staley, they've been pushing to get their own separate media rights deal. You know, that was something that she talked about in the fall. She expressed hope that they would get their own individual deal. She said that the sport would even benefit from getting other broadcasting partners involved, not just ESPN. So she and other coaches have argued that, you know, that's really the best way for the sport to really showcase its profitability, its commercial viability. But that obviously didn't happen this time around. The NCAA and ESPN agreed to a new deal, I think 8-9 years, about $900 million. And it includes women's college basketball alongside, you know, softball, gymnastics, baseball. The NCAA says that it does value women's, this deal does value women's basketball more than the previous deal, about 10 times more, it says. But, you know, I just can't help but wonder, seeing these extraordinary television ratings, like, if there's a little bit of buyer's remorse there, if the coaches actually were onto something and that they would have benefited from a standalone deal like that.
Mm. There's this incredible Wall Street Journal headline after the final that says NCAA women beat men's in finals ratings for the first time, but got 99% less TV money. Tom, was that well known? I mean, I know that there's not parity, but the differential, was that differential well known?
Yeah, it is pretty well known. I mean, like I said, wow. This deal that the women's college basketball broadcasting rights is included in, it's along with dozens of other sports, and it's less than $1 billion. I mean, college football, the broadcasting deal for that alone is north of $1 billion. Men's college basketball alone is about $900 million, I think. And so the disparity was well documented. But again, you know, you see, you know, data points, metrics like this showing that not only can the women's game compete with the men's game, it actually eclipses it. I think that just bolsters the argument for more parity. And, you know, I think that when this current deal expires, I think it's actually going to expire at the same time as the current men's deal. So maybe that will create an opening for the men's and the women's games to be packaged together. We'll just have to see.
Right. Alexa, you don't do deals for ESPN. You report for ESPN. But what's your perspective about this?
I was going to say that's way above my pay grade. But one thing I do think that will be interesting to see is that you can obviously point to so many things that have changed in the way the women's tournament has been administered. I mean, they just started using March Madness branding, I believe, in 2022. The championship game has been shown on ABC now. This is the second year. But I'm really curious to see, and I think this is kind of the underlying question of all this, what does this all look like when Caitlin Clark leaves? And even not even just Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's been kind of the face of all this, but we also have, you know, other stars like Angel Reese was a huge name at LSU. I mean, that's when we think about that kind of groundbreaking moment in the final last year. It was the two of them that were squaring off, right? And so I think it's reasonable to expect that maybe the ratings won't be as high next year when it comes to the final than this past year. Not to say that they will be where they were, you know, 3 years ago, but I think what we're trying to figure out now in this space is what will the landscape look like in the women's college game once Clark leaves. But there's still a lot of reason to believe it will be strong. ESPN actually did look at, you know, the viewership outside of, you know, excluding Iowa games, and it was up 76% from last year. So it's not like it's just Clark, but you can't ignore that she's been driving a lot of this. So I think when we think about the big picture, there's a lot kind of nuance there into figuring out what this could look like longer term.
But that's a great stat showing the ratings increasing even in the games Clark was not in. And I know personally with a 6-year-old, almost 7-year-old daughter who likes to, you know, shoot hoops in the backyard. This was the first year she tuned in, you know, and of course she's going to tune in again next year. Maybe not for as many games, maybe not for as long a length of tune, but, you know, every time these moments happen, whether, Tom, to your point, whether it's in the NBA decades ago or now in the WNBA this coming season, it raises the water level overall for the entire sport.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, I do think that this is a real situation of a rising tide lifting all boats. You're seeing it in other sports. The NCAA Women's Gymnastics Championship last year drew a record television audience. I know in recent years, the Women's College World Series has actually outdrawn the Men's College World Series. And I've been fascinated to see this phenomenon play out abroad too, you know, in countries that have been slower to embrace women's athletics than the United States. In February, there were more than 60,000 people who turned out to watch the Arsenal and Manchester United women's teams in London. That was a record for the Women's Super League over there. That's the top soccer league in England. And so, you know, for so long, you see these soccer-crazed countries like England, like Spain, Argentina, there was virtually no interest in the women's game. But that's obviously all changing. Spain and England, they played in the Women's World Cup final last year. And I know in both of those countries, there were record TV audiences. And so it's kind of just, it's interesting to see this play out as not just a phenomenon here in the United States, but a truly global trend.
I have some more questions about that. So let me hit pause, take a quick break, much more in just a moment.
Three, two, one. Political Breakdown is a daily politics podcast from KQED in San Francisco that goes deep into the issues you care about. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Look, 2024 is gonna get weird.
Who decides when there's been an insurrection or not?
We're still in the innovation phase of AI.
And that is where you see that they're not actually being equitable and trying to build a utopia where we can all use drugs happily together.
But whatever happens this election year, the KQED Politics team is in this with you. Political Breakdown. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we hope you've been enjoying our show. And if you have, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to hit the follow button as well so you don't miss an episode. All right, we're back on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. I'm Brian Stelter talking with Alexa Philippou and Tom Klute. So let me go on a limb a little bit. See if I can make some connections between stories. We're talking about women's basketball. We're talking about the rise of women's sports. But in the entertainment realm, in the music industry, the biggest stars on the planet are Taylor Swift and Beyonce. One of the biggest movies last year, still one of the biggest movies this year, is Barbie. And here we're talking about Caitlin Clark being the most interesting athlete in America right now. Is there, Alexa, some connective tissue between all of these stories?
Well, first of all, I think Caitlin Clark would absolutely love to be kind of in the conversation or compared to Taylor Swift, because I know she's a huge Swiftie. But to answer your actual question, I absolutely think there is. I mean, this is a moment for women, for women's empowerment, for women being at the forefront of society, but also just being recognized of the power that they hold, whether or not it's as, you know, entertainers, as athletes, as, I mean, even as consumers. I mean, we could talk about the purchasing power of women and how they drive those decision makers and households. I mean, that's right. Each other separate conversation. But I think we're just at this point in society, and I know it's, you know, quite different maybe in the political realm and the state of things, but women are kind of driving all these forces, and that is just not being ignored. And it's really powerful. And yeah, just speaking as a reporter covering sports, it's like really heartening to see that like women's basketball, women's sports in general are being elevated or on this trajectory, because for so long they were being held back or ignored. And that's something we just can't, I hope like the newer generation of players, the newer generation of reporters, of fans does not take that for granted, because as we've seen across, you know, society in so many ways, that's not how it's been for, you know, much of human history.
Right, right. I mean, what you just said, the economic power of women, that really sticks out in my head. At the same time, Tom, when I turn on the television and I watch political news, I hear about female candidates like Nikki Haley being shunted to the side. And I hear men debating what women can do to manage their reproductive rights. And I hear all these arguments that sound like they're from the 1800s as opposed to the 2000s. So I can't help but just put that into the conversation here a little bit when, you know, the WNBA draft is coming up, and, you know, it's going to be this big sports and big news story in the wake of these monster ratings. There's a political conversation that sometimes feels like it's dragging us back. At the same time, sports, it's moving us forward.
No, I think that's a striking disconnect, you know, and I think you hit the nail on the head that just, you know, both in the cultural zeitgeist from sports to entertainment. Yeah, I mean, women, they're in ascendancy. They're in the vanguard, you know? And at the same time, yeah, our politics, they continue to get, as you said, shunted to the side.
It's the toxic politics. I will move on. I won't let it ruin this conversation. since I mentioned the draft. Beyond Caitlin Clark, what should we be watching for? And what is this season going to mean for the WNBA? The league is adding a 13th team next year, right? In 2025, it's going to be owned and operated by the Golden State Warriors. This is the first new WNBA team in 15 years. But before then, 2024, what to expect this season, Tom?
I mean, I think that they're just going to look to continue to build on all of the momentum that they demonstrated last year. You know, like I said, the WNBA finals last fall between the New York Liberty and the Las Vegas Aces, not only did it draw a significant television audience, I think the biggest in 20 years for the league, but it really felt like a cultural shift. You know, you saw all of these A-list celebrities courtside at the games. You had players like LeBron and others, like, you know, live tweeting the games. You had all of these like cultural signifiers that kind of provided evidence that the sport had arrived. And so now you throw someone like Caitlin Clark, who's already a household name, who's, you know, not only the biggest women's college basketball star we've seen in generations, she's really truly one of the biggest collegiate stars, period, we've seen in years. And so I think that when you throw her into the mix, given all of the progress and the strides that league has already made in recent years, they already have a terrific mix of talent, a lot of really great players, two signature teams in big markets like New York and Las Vegas. I think that she could easily be a galvanizing force. And I think that similar to what we saw this past month throughout the NCAA tournament, I think her games, the Indiana Fever's games, instantly become appointment viewing. You know, I was looking at their schedule. I saw that they play the Liberty, I think their third game of the season in mid-May. I mean, I'm there. I'm absolutely going to be there at Barclays Center. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. You know, every time she plays a marquee player, I know the Phoenix Mercury are already promoting their upcoming game with Indiana, you know, billing it as the GOAT versus the Rook, Diana Taurasi versus Caitlin Clark. You're going to see a lot of that. I think the league and all of these individual franchises are really going to lean in and try to, you know, continue to capitalize on this momentum.
Conversely, Alexa, are there any challenges the WNBA is facing that we should point out? I'm thinking low salaries compared to the men's game, for example.
Yeah, well, we did a player survey last year where we asked players what they thought the biggest issue facing the league was. You know, over half of the respondents mentioned travel. One big difference between, you know, a lot of what these college players experience and what the pro players are experiencing is that the WNBA does not charter typically, besides kind of specific circumstances or, you know, in the postseason. The other, you know, you mentioned salaries. I mean, I do think the players are hoping that there's, you know, in the next CBA negotiations that salary number goes up. A lot of that's going to depend on what this media rights deal looks like once it's up for the league. And so right now, I think this is a critical moment for the WNBA, one that Kathy Engelbert is going to have to navigate super carefully because she's going to have to juggle, you know, everything that comes from, you know, this media rights deal, what this new CBA looks like, calls for expansion, the chartering issue, lack of roster spots has been a huge kind of sticking point recently, prioritization, which is a whole kind of complicated set of policies, which means that the WNBA is trying to get its players to only play in the league instead of having to go overseas. And that's what something they do to kind of complement their salaries. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And as Tom is saying, the league's going to have to do its best to try and use this surge in popularity that we've seen from the women's college game and be able to capitalize off of it and really kind of ride that tide and kind of go to even newer heights when it comes to what it looks like moving forward.
It sure sounds like a fun time to be a women's basketball beat reporter, though.
It's fun, stressful, tiring, all of the above. But it's the place to be. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
And Tom, you're going to go try to interview Caitlin Clark at the draft next week?
Fingers crossed. I've gathered that I'm not the only one who wants to talk to her. So there could be some competition on that front. But I'm hoping to get some time with her. The woman of the hour.
The woman of the year. Best of luck, Tom.
Thank you.
Alexa, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
And once again, that was Alexa Philippou, who covers women's basketball for ESPN, and Tom Clute, who writes about media, sports, and politics for Vanity Fair. This episode of Inside the Hive was produced by Gianna Palmer. Steven Valentino is our executive producer. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. We had engineering assistance from James Yost and mixing by Bob Mallory. And I'm Brian Stelter. You can find me on Twitter and Threads at Brian Stelter. Please drop me a line with your questions, comments, and ideas for the show. You can also email me anytime at bstelter@gmail.com. And we'll be back in your podcast feed next week.
America has a problem, one that is uniquely ours. On the new season of Long Shadow, I delve into the complicated history of firearms from the Second Amendment to the AR-15. I try to make sense of how we got here and how we might find a path forward. From Longlead, PRX, and Campside Media, in collaboration with The Trace, I'm Garrett Graff, and this is Long Shadow, In Guns We Trust. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.